Well, Shana Tova, everyone. Happy New Year. May this be a great year for you and for all of us. And that is what we are looking forward to. Now, you know, we can't escape it. Government is on everybody's mind. Right? It's the way it is. The period that we're in as we look forward to Election Day, the presidential election, and of course, Rosh Hashanah is all about government because, as Rabbi Nathan mentioned last night, today we coronate our king, and that's why we blow the shofar. So we're talking about governance, and I'd like to say a few things. It's actually been a concern of our people from the very beginning, from the days of King David and King Saul, and today in the Haftarah we read about Shmuel, the birth of the prophet, who was a prophet, but back in those days, prophets had something of a governmental responsibility to Israel. We've always been concerned about government. Let me share with you an interesting vignette from Jewish history, which touches on this in kind of a very provocative way. So, in 1605, in that general time period, there was a pirate who was Jewish. You ever hear of such a thing? A Jewish pirate. Yeah. Samuel Palache. And a Jew, He was Reish, I should say. He was a Jewish pirate, but before he took to the seven seas, he, was a leader in the community. He was from a long rabbinical family. And, so he, and of course this was roughly, still in the general time framework of the Inquisition, which was still happening in Europe. And so he led a number of Moranos, or conversos, I should say, a bit more accurate term, conversos, the closest we can get to Messianic Jews in that period, Jewish people who had embraced Yeshua. He led them to Amsterdam. And this was to test the sincerity of the government's claim, the government of Amsterdam, to have a very open and liberal attitude toward people who did not adhere to the state religion. And so he brought a small group of these conversos, but he learned quickly that things were not so tolerant there as he had hoped. And so he had to hold a Yom Kippur service in his home, and the police showed up, and only after much pleading and after much negotiation were charges dropped against these people. And actually, in the police records of Amsterdam, we find that this was, in 1605, the first Yom Kippur service on record in that city. But again, it points to the importance and sometimes the blindness of governments. And so there we go. Now, he was a pirate. He was a rabbi and a pirate. And shortly after this, he took to the seas, and he was in the employ of the government of the Netherlands. The idea was to raid Spanish ships laden with gold and other treasure that would come from the New World back to Spain. And so he was amenable to this because, of course, in 1492, our people were kicked out of Spain again by the government of Ferdinand and Isabella. So he would raid ships. And government can be informal, too. I mean, we have a government here in the congregation, a governmental structure. And on the pirate ship, I suppose there was a structure as well. He was the captain of the ship. And I can't help but think about what it must have been like on that ship. He had a kosher butcher who would make his meals. And I just imagine after raiding a Spanish galleon, he would invite the captain into his quarters for a meal, and he'd say, so, Miguel, we'll have a little brisket, we'll have some schnapps, a little Brooklyn cheesecake, and after that you'll walk the plank. That's what I imagine. You know, it's just something very humorous about a Jewish rabbi pirate ship captain. And, but seriously, government, we need government. I mean, we have to have our mind, we have to have government, and governments can do things good or bad. Now let's think a little bit about this upcoming presidential election, and let me offend all of you, or most of you, for a few minutes. One general observation that I think we can all agree with is that the current candidates are not terribly popular. Would you agree with that? We know that is the case. Okay. But I will say this about government. Fighting with words is better than the way it often happens around the world and through history, and that is fighting with swords and guns. Better to fight with words. And we can be very grateful for the government of the United States, where for this long period of time, since 1789, has occurred and has been able to function largely without guns and fighting in the transition of power, but rather words. So we are very grateful for that. Better to fight with words. Here's another positive example, and Shimon Peres, the former president, prime minister of Israel, died last Wednesday. He was 93 years old, and he worked for peace in the Middle East, and that is a very difficult thing to do in that neighborhood of the world, which is so filled with hatred and misunderstanding and all the problems that we know about. So he was asked about his philosophy and how he approached things. And he was prone to historical allusions. He viewed himself more as a philosopher than a politician. But when he was asked about the 1993 Oslo Accords, which you may be remember, it was an attempt for Israel and the Palestinians to come together. Finally, it did not work out. But here is what he said. He said, there was no other alternative. We had to do it. He added, an ancient Greek philosopher was asked, what's the difference between war and peace? And he said, in war, the old bury the young. In peace, the young bury the old. We want peace, not war, was his point. He said, I felt that I could make the world better for the young, and that would be the greatest thing that I could do. You see, government leaders can have noble motivations and be admirable, even if the things that they sought to accomplish did not necessarily occur. Okay? So we appreciate this sentiment, despite the fact that the Oslo Accords did not work out as hoped for. Now, sometimes government leaders do very courageous things. And I mentioned in my sermon on this past Shabbat, we talked about the fact that in Europe, through much of our history, earliest was the 13th century and then later, Jews were forced to wear special clothing, sometimes pointy hats or sometimes badges. And you know that during the Nazi regime, again, we're talking about the evils of government here at this particular moment, we were forced to wear yellow stars. And that began right after Kristallnacht and then continued throughout the Nazi period. However, we pointed out, here's a governmental leader, we're talking about government today, we've got to give a lot of credit, King Christian X from Denmark threatened to wear the badge himself if the Jews were forced to wear a badge. And the Nazis backed off and didn't force the Danish Jews to wear the star. So we appreciate that. And we have, of course, government on our minds these holy days. And for many of us, the operative expression, I hate to say it, is oy vey. Oy, Hebrew for woe, vey, Yiddish, for woe, 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 oy vey. All right? That's the truth. Donald Trump, a narcissistic, bombastic personality who casually ruins lives of people at the Taj Mahal Casino and is cavalier about the false claims of Trump University where people lost a lot of money, okay, and other examples. Then we have Hillary Clinton, whose family scandals and cover-ups and subterfuge over decades are well known. Some of you may remember Whitewater and the other things. Well, so we have a few other alternatives, relative unknowns. And yet you and I will vote because we may see other more redeeming sides to these candidates. Trump, the political outsider, may just be the guy we need to make a deal and rescue the United States from an entrenched globalist political agenda. Maybe his outlandish ideas really are more starting places in negotiations than they are actual convictions. Maybe there's more to him than we imagine. Hillary has a record of standing with the politically and economically disenfranchised, and that is undeniable. Maybe there is some truth to her claim that she wants to do something other than reinforce the power of the 1% and really does want to help out the disenfranchised of our society. Well, each of us will decide on November 8th, but fewer of us, as I mentioned, are excited about the options. Now, let's talk about someone we can get excited about on this Rosh Hashanah. And it's not a Republican, and it's not a Democrat, and it's not a Libertarian or a Green Party candidate. It is the God of Israel who rules and will rule this world through his representative, Yeshua, the Messiah. He's the one that we can get excited about. It's Avinu Malkeinu, our Father and our King, and the expression of his very reality among us, Yeshua, who came once to suffer out of love and again to come to rule this world the way this world needs to be ruled. Now, I want you to hear a little bit of tomorrow's Haftorah portion. So tomorrow we'll gather again, but here's a little bit of it. Hear the word of the Lord, you nations. Proclaim it in distant coastlands. He who scattered Israel will gather them and will watch over his flock like a shepherd. For the Lord will deliver Jacob and redeem them from the hand of those stronger than they. They will come and shout for joy in the heights of Zion. They will rejoice in the bounty of the Lord, the grain, the new wine, and the olive oil. The young of the flocks and herds, they will be like a well-watered garden, and they will sorrow no more. Then young women will dance and be glad, and young men and old as well. I will turn their mourning into gladness. I will give them comfort and joy instead of sorrow. I will satisfy their priests with abundance, and my people will be filled with my bounty, declares the Lord. On Rosh Hashanah, we crown our God King, the good King, the one who is worthy to stand in judgment over us. But exactly who will bring this about? Who's going to do this? Hear the word of the Lord from a book which in the Jewish Bible is considered part of the Kotavim, the writings, but in the Christian Bible, the prophet Daniel. And there are various reasons why Daniel is not considered strictly a prophet. He spoke to the nations more than Israel. But he is our kind of guy, and I want to read to you his words. Daniel, after outlining through prophetic vision the rise and fall of different kingdoms, they think they're so great, they think they'll be forever, and then they crash. He outlines all that. And then we read about a scene in God's abode of heaven. As I looked, thrones were set in place, and the Ancient of Days took his seat. His clothing was as white as snow, and the hair of his head was like wool. His throne was flaming with fire, and its wheels were all ablaze. A river of fire was flowing, coming out from before him, and tens of thousands and thousands upon thousands stood before him, and the court was seated, and the books were opened. The passage continues. In my vision, Daniel says, at night, I looked, and there before me was one like a son of man, a bar enosh, a son of man coming with the clouds of heaven. As he approached the Ancient of Days and was led into his presence, he was given authority and glory and sovereign power, and all nations and peoples of every language worshipped him. His dominion is an everlasting dominion that will not pass away, and his kingdom is one that will never be destroyed. And the best thing of all, it's true love for Israel, for the peoples of the world, for you and me. It's that true love that motivates him. You and I, if you embrace him, and I embrace him, and the more I get to know him, the more I love him. Just think Yeshua is the greatest. We are in love. We're not in love. We are in love. In his love. Knowing this motivates to come clean with God and with one another during these next 10 days, the days of the Yomim Norim. And the big question we are all left with is this. What kind of subjects of the king will we be this coming year? Let me speak to us as a Messianic Jewish community, speak to you and speak among us. Our mandate is to do, in a sense, what none of his other subjects can quite do in the same way. Ours is to be Israel and to maintain that covenant and make the choices on Saturday mornings and other times and during the week to live that out in reality on the ground, even if it costs us something. That's part of our mandate. And our mandate as a subset of Israel that loves Yeshua is to love him more and more, and to appreciate him, and to see him in the multifaceted wonder of his goodness, this one who came among us and healed people and loved people and welcomed people and just was the best. That is our dual mandate, and it is a unique and wonderful privilege, not just a mandate. So as I finish up, let me again quote Shimon Peres. He said this, "Sometimes people ask me, what is the greatest achievement you have reached in your lifetime or that you will reach in the future?" So I reply that there was a great painter named Mordechai Ardon. And he was asked which picture was the most beautiful he had ever painted. Ardon replied, "The picture I will paint tomorrow." This is also my answer, and I hope it will become your answer. May our collective answer as Congregation Ruach Israel be this, in this coming year, 5777, L'shana tova tiktevu, May we all be inscribed for a very good year.